Well, my name is Greg, and as you came in, I'm the high school pastor, and as you came in, you got a rock and a marker. I'm going to tell you right now, that is not ammunition, regardless of what I say. Thanks, Nate. You're going to hold on to that, and at home, if you don't have a rock handy, you might want to grab a piece of paper and a pen or a rock from in your garden. But hey, if you were to go into my office at my home, you would find the typical office-y things. You know, you'd find a computer, you'd find a printer, you'd find some books, but you might overlook those things because your eye might be drawn to some of the more unique items in my office. I brought a couple of them here with me today to, in a sense, show and tell. The first item is a framed movie ticket stub from Pirates of the Caribbean 3, circa May 25th of 2007. It was the midnight showing. I was young back then, did midnight showings. That's the first item. And the second item is this. It is a vintage toy monkey. Now, you might be thinking, Greg really needs to clean his office. And while, yeah, that's true, that's not why I brought these two items with me today. Each of these items hold a special significance to me. This ticket stub was from a group outing with a bunch of friends. One of the friends was a beautiful brunette named Lindsay. I was able to finagle a spot near her in this movie, and the rest was history. This ticket stub on my shelf represents a lifelong relationship. This monkey is a gag gift from a former student of mine. The student is now pursuing full-time ministry. And this monkey, oddly enough, serves as a representation for me, of a reminder of a call that God has placed on my life to equip the next generation for the work of ministry. And I bring these things up because I bet that if I were to go into your house, I might find items of significance for you as well. Be it a souvenir from a trip or an award you won or a photo from a family member who has passed. The point is this, is that we are tactile people, right? We love to have something that we can hold and touch and look at that brings us back to a memory or reminds us of a big event or represents someone that is significant to us. We memorialize these events that hold meaning. I want you to do me a favor. Here in the room, the family venue or at home, I want you to turn to someone near you and tell about what you have in your house that serves as a memorial and what it represents. If you're at home, you might even point to the thing if it's in your living room and talk about it as a family. I'm going to give you 15 seconds to do this, so you got to be quick. You can go ahead and talk. Great, I love the murmuring. Thanks for doing that. Hey, you want to know what you just did? You just passed on the meaning of something using a memorial. You just, in a way, applied our message today without even hearing it. How cool is that? You are living biblically. Let's go home, right? Well, hold on. I still have you for like 28 minutes. But in this time, what we're going to do is we're going to learn about how important a simple exercise like this is, both for the one sharing it as well as for the one hearing it. How these tactile memorials that we place in our homes can become tools for us to go back to moments of God's faithfulness and to share those stories of faith with the next generation. That's going to be our focus today. Our text is Joshua chapters 3 and 4. And as we jump in, we are concluding today a 12-week series about the Israelites' journey, which began as an exodus from slavery in Egypt and led them to the entrance of the promised land. It's a journey that should have taken them just a handful of weeks, but because of events and, let's be honest, the sin of the people, it's a journey that took them over 40 years. And there are many high points in this journey, in this road trip, that we've talked about in previous weeks. We talked about how God opened up the Red Sea for the Israelites to walk through, that God established the leadership of Moses, that God delivered to them a binding agreement chiseled into stone tablets from a mountain, and that he promised his presence and gave them his victory over those who opposed him. We talked about all of these really great moments in the Israelites' history, but we also talked about all the low points in their journey as well, how these people complained like constantly, how they were a breath away from turning around and going back to Egypt like multiple times, how they bowed down to idols, how their leader Moses disqualified himself, and they wandered in the wilderness of the Sinai desert until an entire generation passed away. But here we are, as we open up to Joshua 3, 126 chapters of biblical text since they first set out on their journey. And they are now at the footsteps away from walking into the promised land. As Pastor Randy told us last Sunday, they have a new leader, Joshua. They are a new people, often referred to as the children of Israel. And they are populous. Many scholars believe that they number over a million. But they have the same mission: to walk into the promised land that God has given them and to their ancestors. And as we jump into Joshua 3, they are at the end of their wandering, just about ready to cross over and receive that promise. And so jump in with me in verse 1 of chapter 3. It says, "Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over." Here's the location. They are on the east bank of the River Jordan. On the other side is Jericho and effectively the promised land. Now, there's a subtle detail that you might miss and you won't catch until you read later on in the story. But the timing of this, from our perspective anyway, is it's all wrong. It's springtime, which you would think is quite a pleasant time to be camping by a river, but springtime is when the rainwaters of Mount Hermon from the north run down the mountain, pour into the Jordan River, and flow down to the Dead Sea at a furious pace. Springtime is when the River Jordan floods, and it is not a time to be crossing with you and a million family members. What I want you to do is I want you to imagine being an Israelite parent at this moment. You pack up your bags, you take a couple mile trek to the Jordan River, you pitch your tents, you get your kids all settled in, and you walk down to the Jordan River. What you see is a river that is about a mile wide. It's dirty and it's raging forward. What you hear is the continuous roar of the waves as they careen downstream. What you think about is your kids. Little Enoch, who could barely tie his sandal, and Miriam, who can't doggy paddle to save her life. And then you think about your stuff, your livestock, your clothes, your tent supplies, and husbands, let's hope that you think about your wife. Like, if you are carrying all this stuff, trying to get a donkey across a mile-wide river, your wife is probably caring for the kids, and as you're thinking about all this stuff, the reality settles in that this is not going to work. The thought of your family trying to cross that river to get to the promised land, it's terrifying. You realize that there is no natural way through this. This is wrong. And so you're disheartened. And you turn around, you walk back up to camp, and this is what you hear. Look at verse 5. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." Amazing things. That phrase in Hebrew is the closest word in the Old Testament anyway for what we today call miracles. Joshua is basically saying, God is going to perform a miracle here. And I love how author and theologian C.S. Lewis defines the word miracle. He says that it is an interference with nature by a supernatural power. For Lewis, nature is simply what happens of its own accord, like the natural way things are. For example, nature is the Jordan River at flood stage. What happens of its own accord is that it flows and that it floods. But Joshua tells the people, tomorrow, a miracle is going to happen. God will interfere with the natural flow of things. And so if you are an Israelite parent at that moment, here's what you do. You listen to Joshua. And you consecrate yourself and your family. Consecration, this is a practice for the Israelites. They do it in preparation for a movement of God. To summarize it, it basically involves washing yourself and your family and putting on special outfits. It's kind of like the practice of taking a shower and laying out your clothes before Sunday morning church service. This practice is preparing yourself for interacting with God, the one who breaks through the natural. And I think that there's something to be said here. And it's what do you do when a problem as wide as the Jordan River before you and there's no natural way out of it? What do you do? Well, you consecrate yourself. You prepare yourself to see God break through. This is why we spend our mornings in the Word of God. This is why we make it a habit of fellowshipping here or online every Sunday morning. We do these practices in preparation to see God move. And so as an Israelite parent, you hear the roar of the Jordan in the distance, and you take your children, and you wash them up, and you lay out new outfits, and you get ready to see God interfere. Because God, the living God, He is going to interfere. So as the story goes, Joshua, he gathers all of his people the morning before this miracle. And just before they begin to break camp, this is what he says. In verse 9, he says, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. Notice the phraseology here. He says, the living God is among you. That's intentional, right? That is intentional. Because on the other side of the river, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Jebusites, they've all got their religious systems. They've all got their quote-unquote gods. But none of them are living. None of them have the power to break through the natural. They can't hear, they can't speak, they can't interfere. They are in of themselves natural. But your God, he's the living God. He is supernatural. He extends beyond the natural boundaries of this world and is able to, at will, affect the natural course of things. He is able to break through with a miracle. And so don't forget in your Jordan-sized problems that your God is alive. Joshua says, the living God, he's gonna do a miracle. That's what he's gonna do. And so I just want you to read with me the biblical text of this account of what God does. Verse 14, so when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now, the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. We mentioned this. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the Sea of Arabah, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite of Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed crossing on dry ground. What an incredible story, right? Again, just put yourself in the place of an Israelite parent. You see the Ark of the Covenant, which is this box that is a tangible representation of the presence of God, and it's being carried into the raging river. You might be thinking, hey, that's a great way to lose an ark. But no sooner does the presence of God enter into that river, the river stops flowing altogether. It stands up in a heap, and you begin to realize that the Spirit of God goes before you. And he provides for you. This is a miracle. God intervening with the natural way of this world. As an Israelite, this event reminds you of a story your grandparents told you. 40 years earlier, a great escape from Egypt, the devil in pursuit behind them, the Red Sea in front of them, and Moses raising his staff at the high waters and God parting the sea right down the middle. I don't know about you, but I find it so incredibly fitting that the exit out of slavery in Egypt and the entrance into the promised land, they're so similar. God, the living God, exerts his power to bring people out of bondage. And God, the living God, exerts the same power to bring them into his promises. And you better believe that this is the same power that is at work in the gospel. I mean, in sending Jesus, God has broken into the natural way of this world with its bondage, its brokenness, and its bad decisions of sin. And he provides a way out of that brokenness and sin by the blood shed of Jesus on the cross, in a sense, splitting the sea of death. And he provides a way for us to experience safe passage into a new life in him, cutting off the flow of death. The greatest miracle God has done is breakthrough into this world through Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. So I got to ask you, how about you? What's your miracle? When has God broken through to you? When has God provided a way when it seemed like there was no natural way? Maybe it was when you realized for the very first time that Jesus saves sinners like you and I. Or maybe it was a time when something so out of the ordinary happened that the only natural explanation was that a supernatural living God interfered with a problem in your life. What's your miracle? I want you to think about that memory and hold on to it for a while, because we're going to come back to that. As we continue along in our story, though, the children of Israel, they cross the Jordan on dry land, and they walk up the banks of the Promised Land. And the moment that the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, they step foot on the west bank, the river begins to flow again. But not before something very interesting happens. Look at chapter 4, verse 1. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." The Lord says to Joshua, "Choose 12 guys, one from each tribe, and have them, as they're crossing the river, grab stones from the bottom of the river. And then when they get to camp, there's just to pile them all up." This is interesting. Why does God say this? Well, let's continue on. He'll tell us. And so Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the Ark of the Lord, your God, into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the Israelites." And here's why. "To serve as a sign among you." To serve as a sign. The idea is simple. It's when you see a miracle, you make a memorial. When God moves in your life, be it helping you overcome an insurmountable problem or rescuing you from a pattern of destructive behaviors or aligning situations to bring good out of a mess, you are to respond by memorializing it, by creating a sign that will help you remember this is how we bring worship to God. I'll say it again, we are tactile people. We bring souvenirs back from vacation. We take grandma's china and we lay it out for a special meal. These are signs among us that help us remember. Another item in my office is a cardboard cutout in the shape of a tire. Early on in my marriage and in ministry, finances were very tight. And it was Christmas time, and Lindsay and I, we needed new tires in our 1997 Lincoln Continental. We decided that our Christmas gift to one another was going to be new tires. Super romantic, right? But we thought this was necessary. A few nights before Christmas, I was wrapping up a message for my youth group, and one student just runs up on stage. The student had found out that Lindsay and I were living pretty lean, and they rallied the students together to buy us new tires. To represent this, they brought up a cardboard cutout in the shape of a tire. And I kept that tire. And each time I look at it, it reminds me that God moves in the hearts of the next generation. That God inspires them to do amazing things. That God provides in incredibly generous ways. And that's what these stones are. They are tangible items at the bottom of the Jordan that represent an intangible miracle piled up as a memorial so that they may remember that God provides. But there's another reason this memorial is so important. It's not just for their own memory, but it's for the next generation's memory as well. Read verse 6. It says, "In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When across the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. Here's the reason. So that we can share this story with the next generation. Tell them, Joshua says. When you see a miracle, you make a memorial. Because there's going to be a moment in the future where your kids will ask you, what does this mean? And you will get to tell them the story. My daughter, Arietta, she is 1 year old. And she started walking about 2 months ago. She can't really talk, but she's super curious. And so she does this thing where she walks up to me, like hands out, and I'm like, oh, that's sweet, and I pick her up, and no sooner do I pick her up than she turns around completely around for me and starts pointing to whatever in the room she could see. It's kind of like her way of saying, what's that? What's that? And I answer, I say, well, she says, what's that? And I say, that's a lamp. What's that? That's a chair. What's that? That's your mom. Now, if that doesn't represent the role of a parent, I don't know what does. I mean, we take our children and we help them discover the way things are in this world. It's our job, in a sense, to point out what we know so that they might know. And for Christian parents, we not only pass on the way things are, but we pass on the reality that behind the things that are, there is a God who is, that has created the things that are and gives meaning to the things that are and leads us in a way that we should go about interacting in the way this things that there are. The role of a parent is to pass this on to our children. And this is a concept that the children of Israel would have found absolutely familiar. In fact, not long ago in their history, Moses, their former leader, they gave this command in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Here's what Moses says. He says, love the Lord your God, make that the driving force of your life, but also pass that on to the next generation. Talk about it at home and outside of the home. Talk about it in the morning, at night. What he's saying is our role as parents. And I also believe that he is not only talking to parents, but he's talking to people who know parents in this context. He's saying our collective role is to pass on the faith to the next generation everywhere and always. And so do me a favor, if you're in the room or if you're in a family venue or even at home, I want you to raise your hand if you are a parent. Now keep your hand up, and if you don't have your hand raised, I want you to look around, and I want you to raise your hand if you know somebody with their hand raised. If you have your hand up, congratulations, you have just volunteered to train up the children of our church, our family ministries team. They're here, they're gonna be taking down your names, they're gonna contact you within the next hour. Just kidding, but kinda not. The point remains, is that it's our job to raise up the next generation to love God and marvel at the amazing things that he does. It's not just the church's job. It's not just the family ministry's job. It's the parent's job, the step-parent's job, the small group leader, the friend, the coach, the neighbor, the acquaintance, the grandparent, the auntie, the uncle, the coworker, the teacher, and the boss. We reach down to the next generation and we pass on our faith. Moses uses this phrase, impress these commands on your children. The image associated with the word impress is that of an engraving artist chiseling into a blank slab of rock in order to create out of it a memorial. The idea is that we take our children and with painstaking care, we impress or we etch into them the word of God so that it might last. This is a great word, impress. Because you know, and I know, that our kids are impressionable. They are, in a sense, blank slates, open to any and every message that anyone wants to etch into their lives. Our kids are trying to figure out the world and their place in it. They're saying, what's that? What's that? What's that mean? And there are so many messages out there that will tell our kids what they think that is and what they think that means. Unfortunately, most of those messages come from a worldview that is irrespective of the supernatural living God. Our kids need the skilled hands of caring, godly adults parents, step-parents, small group leaders, friends, coaches, neighbors, acquaintances, grandparents, aunties, uncles, coaches, co-workers, bosses, etching the word of God into their lives, impressing their faith upon them. The big question remains is like, how do we do that though, right? How do we impress the faith on the next generation? We'll look at the very next verse in Deuteronomy 6. He gives us a way. He says, tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. The next verse, he says, we don't have the next verse. That's okay. He says, write them on your door frames of your houses and on your gates. What he says is make memorials, tangible items that can be displayed to the next generation. And you guys, we can do this. We can create object lessons in our homes that will lead to discussion. We can place Bible art on our walls that reinforce the driving values of our lives. We could spur on our kids' imagination of faith with tangible items that can serve as learning tools. But I get it. You might be like, but Greg, I'm not really that crafty. And to that, I would say, I don't really care. You know how to write, correct? A handwritten verse on a note card can be a memorial. A cardboard cutout of a tire can be a memorial. Joshua used plain old rocks. I don't even think he polished them. The reality is that it's not the actual item that's important. It's the story that you tell that's important. Look again at Joshua, what he says in verse 6. He says, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? A more literal translation of this is, what are these stones to you? The Israelite children will one day point at the stones and ask what they mean to the parents personally. And the parents are to be ready to give an answer of what God has done for them personally. In the same way, there will be a moment in your future when your kids or your grandkids or somebody else's kids will ask you, in a sense, what are these stones to you? Or what is God to you? Or what difference does your faith make on you? And it's going to be your job to answer personally, to tell a story. When we see a miracle, we make a memorial because there will be a moment in the future where we will get to share what it all means. This is how we impress the faith on the next generation, by sharing the stories of his miraculous work in our lives. You want an easy way to tee up those conversations? Make memorials. Leverage the curiosity of our little blank slates with notes or cardboard cutouts or something else tangible. And one day in the future, when they are older, they might do the same with their kids. That's Joshua's vision anyway. I got one more passage to show you. And this happens 10 days after the events of the Jordan River. The Israelites are camped up at a place called Gilgal. And once again, Joshua sets up these stones. And once again, he tells the Israelites why. In verse 21, he said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. Did you catch it? Did you catch the shift in phrase? He says, when your descendants ask their parents. Joshua's vision was that years down the line, these memorials will still stand and will testify to the miracle of the living God. Now, those stones aren't there anymore, but the story remains. The story has been passed on from generation to generation. Listen, there is going to be a moment in the future, and you will be gone. You might be memorialized as a picture on somebody's end table. And there might be a moment when someone young asks somebody older, pointing at your picture, who is that? What were they all about? My question to you is what do you want them to say? For me, I hope that what will be said is that that's your great, 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 great Grandpa Greg. He believed in God and was used by God in mighty ways for his kingdom. Through the good times and the bad, God provided miracle after miracle. And we now follow in that same faith. What do you want them to say about you? What story do you want passed on? What miracle of God's provision do you want memorialized for the next generation? A few minutes ago, I asked you to hold on to a memory of God's faithfulness in your life. Now I want to give you a moment to memorialize it. For those of you who are here in the auditorium or in our family venue, when you came in today, you received a river rock and a marker. For those of you who are at home, if you don't have a rock handy, you could use a piece of paper and a pencil or even your cell phone, or you can just take note of this exercise and do it as a family at home after the service. But this rock is to memorialize, is to serve, like Joshua 4, as a memorial of something that the living God has done for you. The band is going to come up, and they're going to play a song. And as they play, you will get the opportunity to turn this rock into your little memorial. On one side of the rock, I want you to simply write a one or two word phrase that describes when you needed God to interfere with the natural course of things. It could be my addiction, or you could write poor decisions or financial hardship. I wrote on mine accessible home, which represents a great need that I had for my family. And then I want you to flip it over, and I want you to write a one or two word phrase that describes how God intervened. I wrote provider on mine. And as you do this, our band is going to start to play a song. The song is called The Blessing. The lyrics are actually based off of a prayer of blessing that Moses instructed the priests to speak over the next generation of Israelites. And in the prayer, it says, like, may the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May his face shine upon you, be gracious to you, and give you peace. And it's fitting that we close a series this way. What Moses desired for the future generations was that they would experience the graciousness, the presence, and the peace of God. And you know what? We want that too. For our generation and the next generation and the next generation, God, we want that too. And so when you are finished writing on your rock, I want you to do something. I want you to just hold on to it, and I want you to stand, and I want you to sing out these words. I want you to sing them out as a blessing for the next generation. Maybe think in your mind of the people that you know who is young around you that you can share the memorials and the miracles that have happened in your life. So write, and when you're ready, stand and bless the next generation.